Are you a wine importer, restaurant wine director, or retailer working with direct import? Probably you are because you're listening to the show right now. Well, do you have also a strong interest in expanding your selection of Italian wines? If so, I have a pretty awesome opportunity for you. I'll be leading a group of buyers to Verona in Italy for the inaugural edition of Wine to Wine, a new forum for buyers to taste directly with producers. Wine to Wine has been developed by Vinitaly, which is the largest trade show in the world. You've probably heard about it. And this is a new chance to meet with producers face to face in Italy, make some great connections in a little bit of a smaller format. All Drink to That is a podcast partner with Wine to Wine, and we're really excited about it. You have the opportunity to join me at Wine to Wine in Italy on December 2nd and 3rd of this year, because a travel and lodging stipend is being made available to buyers. If you are someone who wants to grow your Italian wine portfolio, this is an excellent chance to do so. To apply to join me and the many excellent producers at Wine to Wine, you should send an email to media@vinitalytour.com. That's media@vinitalytour.com. So VINITALY. TOUR.com. You want to include in that email a short bio that covers your work responsibilities and also a paragraph discussing your interest in Italian wine. If the Vinitaly folks like what they see, they'll follow back up with you for some more information. This is a pretty spectacular chance to go to Italy and taste with producers at no cost to you, but you need to have a strong interest in Italian wine and you need to be a buyer. If that's you, email media@vinitalytour.com with your details to get started, and I might just see you in Verona. All Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levi Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Are you guys ready to get warmed up? Because I am.
Portuguese wine from the Douro Valley is inextricably linked with trade and the strategic location of the Douro River. From Oporto, the Douro's mouth to the Atlantic, wines could be easily shipped to England. The strong connection between Portuguese and English trade was initiated with the 1386 Treaty of Windsor. And if the treaty wasn't enough, Portuguese King John I married the daughter of an English duke, Philippa of Lancaster. The treaty and the marriage solidified relations between the two kingdoms, and specifically, merchants from both countries could conduct equal business in either country. Trade increased both ways, and within a century, established trade routes saw a pattern of shipments of wine to England and salt cod to Portugal. A second treaty in 1654 decreased tariffs for English and Scottish merchants conducting business in Portugal, and soon Portugal once again increased sales to England when it lost some competition from France due to politics. When Louis XIV's minister restricted English imports to France, Charles I of England wasn't going to have it. He fought back by banning French imports in England. If France was going to choke off English trade, England was going to do the same thing to France. This left a major wine gap in England, and Portugal rushed to fill the drinking needs of England. Much of the wine traded during this time was a light, bright red from what is today the Vinho Verde wine region. In the 1700s, when French wines were once again allowed back into England, Portuguese wines still kept an advantage. They could be imported for a taxation rate of about one-third less than French wines. The Portuguese wine business boomed, and as business grew quite fast, some fraud ensued. Some people were selling wines that weren't from where they said they were, and others were strengthening their wines with sugar and elderberries. Two market bubbles emerged. One inflated by a false sense of market safety and over-optimism because of England's temporary lack of trade with France. And the second was a bubble based on bad practices. Temporary increased demand fueled a wine trade based on quantity above quality. And after a period of prosperity, the wine bubbles reached their bursting points around the mid-1700s. The Douro found itself in some elderberry double bubble trouble. Portugal's prime minister, the Marquis de Pombal, stepped in with an iron fist to handle the crisis. He established government control of the wine trade. He created a monopoly on port exports, regulated yields, regulated prices, had the Douro region mapped out and port regions demarcated. And he also had all the elderberry trees ripped up within the demarcated zones to help stymie fraudulent elderberry use in the wines. Pombal's actions cut short many of the privileges British merchants had enjoyed in Portugal. And while the merchants weren't too happy about it, Pombal's actions did increase the quality of the region. At this time, though some of the exports were fortified with a bit of brandy, most wines were dry red wines. The 1800s were a wild ride for the Douro region. Two wars plus phylloxera caused all sorts of havoc. But these devastations were punctuated by periods of great prosperity. Intense labor and dedication went into planting the banks of the Douro. Narrow, hand-built terraces had been arduously built, and they highlighted the schist and granite terroir. But after so much of this hard work, phylloxera and war were truly devastating, and some of the abandoned terraces still have not been reclaimed. Stylistic changes were also afoot in the ups and downs of the 19th century. By the mid-1800s, fortifying port during fermentation had become customary after a successful sweet and ripe vintage of 1820. Industrial bottles made it easier to bottle the wines and create a culture of aging vintage port in bottles. And changes happened along the Douro River itself. The Douro River was once one of the only routes to market, but the river's fast-flowing waters and treacherous rapids could prove fatal to both person and cask. In 1780, a series of river-taming initiatives began to change the Douro River. First, a waterfall was removed at a strategic gorge, opening up trade to a whole new area. And by the early 1900s, dams along the river slowed the water's speed and made the Douro a bit more tranquil. But by the time the Douro River was easily navigable to facilitate massive loads of wine trade, sea transport had ironically become obsolete, and wine began to be shipped more by rail and road instead. Port wine comes from such difficult-to-work terraces, and it's enjoyed centuries of intense popularity in Europe, Brazil, and the United States, and now the world. The products of the region include nutty-aged tawnies, unique vintage ports that can handle decades of aging, and dry reds and whites. Some of the older port houses have fascinating histories. Stay tuned to learn more about one of them.
I'm Michelle Basilia, wine director of Blue Hill, New York City.
Lee Campbell from Diner in Brooklyn.
This is Sharon Severins from Amonti Vino in Montclair, New Jersey.
Patrick Capiello, Rebel and Pearl and Ash.
Ian Doran from the Wine Library.
Jeremy Noy, Morel Fine Wine Retail and Wine Bar at Rockefeller Center.
These tri-state buyers all know that 750 is a one-stop resource for the beverage alcohol trade. Search across distributor portfolios, see trade tastings, and easily connect with your sales rep. It's free and easy to sign up. João Nicolau de Almeida of Ramos Pinto on the show today. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. I'm happy to talk to you and have a Portuguese story about Ramos Pinto.
You grew up there in Portugal?
Yes. Ramos Pinto is my mother's family. And when I start working, I had to choose my father's family and my mother's family. My mother is Ramos Pinto, and my father is Nicolau de Almeida. They both have a port wine house.
Your dad created Barca Velha, the dry wine of Portugal.
Yes, so I can say that I was born in a barrel. And all my youngness was passed in the cellars and also in the vineyards. So it's something that is my blood. I'm the sixth generation making wine, and my sons are already winemakers. I have three, and they are three are winemakers, and they are the seventh generation. So it's something that is impossible, and I can't explain. We can get out of this wall of wine.
What was your father like?
My father was a very strange person. It's a person that was very rigid, with us and all the professional work. But on the other hand, he has a lot of humor and has a lot of imagination. He paint, he play music, he like to do strange things. He was a person that liked a lot of how they built in the medieval age, so our house was very strange. It was a castle of the medieval age. And we had a swimming pool, and to get in the swimming pool, we had passed through the castle, and there was this big bridge.
A drawbridge. Yes, a drawbridge.
To go to the swimming pool. And also he painted all of us in the medieval age. So you see the ambience was in one side very strict, but in the other side was really fun. And also he was a very good sportive, and he passed us this this pleasure to be sportman, and also humor, and also rigid, and make the life easier.
Was he a hunter?
He should, but he was not really a hunter. I used to hunt with him. I have a twin brother, and when he was trying to hunt some animal with a noise, my twin brother and myself, we disappear, and he got furious because we were afraid about the noise.
Of the guns,
off. So he was not a really anti-human person. It was more for fun and enjoy the life. And friends, he has a lot of friends. And he gave us this message of enjoy the life.
And why do you think he created Barcavelia? Did he ever talk to you about that?
As I told you, he was a very creative man. He was never happy with the things that happen. He always have to invent something. He invent even a virtual ankle that came from Africa. And this ankle was himself that came by boat by the sea. We live just in front of the sea. And he arrived with a luggage from Africa. And this uncle, Edward, took us to do everything that he didn't let us to do.
He pretended to be someone else.
Yes.
And he took you as children.
For many years, the uncle, Edward, came to give us permission to do what my father what was forbidden from my father.
And as a child, you thought they were two different people?
Yes, totally different. Only when we were 18 or 17, we realized that it was a joke.
He came in a boat?
Yes, he came in a boat.
With luggage?
And he sent a telegram at that time for many months before that he was Uncle Edward, came from Angola, Africa, from the Bay of the Tigers. And he will arrive such a day. And of course, we have to answer. And we have correspondence for many months. And then he finally arrived and was huge party at home. And because he was painting, he was, his hair.
Makeup.
His makeup with the Bill Cream at that time, you know. And when Edward was big hair and not make the hair, so it was totally different, but with the same, you could see that it was a friend.
He wore a wig.
Yes. So it was things like that we had in our. And the Barcavelia comes in this type of creation. He was always looking for something new. And as he liked wine, and we always had wine at the table, he decided to make this wine, which was impossible at that time because the wines at the Douro, they have the very high pH. And when they arrived to April, with the warm weather, they start re-fermenting. And of course, they lose the fruit. They have a different aroma. And he understood and that he learned that in Bordeaux they were cooling the wines. So he decided to send, during the fermentation, send trucks full of ice from Oporto. They took in these bad roads at that time. It took 8 hours to arrive at Valmiau at that time.
Upriver.
Upriver. It's close to Spain. And I remember my twin brother and myself, we were there during all day waiting for the truck full of ice cubes, huge ice cubes, which was fantastic because it was really warm weather there and too hot. And for us, it was a great moment when the truck arrived full of ice. We jumped to the truck. It was like a swimming pool. And then this ice was to cool the fermentation. So he had, for the first time in Douro, a wine that could keep the fresh fruit. Old wines, as I said, they have different fermentations, second fermentations, and they spoil this fresh fruit. So with this system, he could control the situation and keep this fresh fruit. That was a fantastic new thing in the Douro. And that became very, very important, very... because also he only... At that time, this wine was very rustic in the beginning. And he didn't have the barrels, the wood that we have now that are very soft tannins. The wood that he used was Portuguese wood, which is really thick tannins. And to become softer, to put the wine softer, he has a big fight with his directors, general manager, which was my brother-in-law, to wait 7 years to sell the wine. It was the moment that he think the consumer could drink the wine, because these rustic tannins has been dropped, has been more soft, and that... these two conditions gave a wine that everybody liked it. Everybody was happy with a new thing, and it was a huge success in Douro. And of course, he didn't make every year, because there were some years it was even difficult to control the situation. And the way he controlled the situation, it was more empirical than scientific. Today we have a scientific way to control malolactic and all this. For him, it was the taste. He has all the barrels. He put the wine in all the barrels. And he tastes it one by one. And only the ones were with a proper good taste, a good flavor, he select. The other ones were going to other wines, other labels. So there is these two main things to select a great wine. It was the fermentation, cool fermentation. Before that, there was only a selection. He blend the grapes from a lower part, about 150 meters altitude by the river, and he pick other grapes at 600 meters altitude. So this low part was given the structure, volume, maturation, and the highest part was giving acidity, fresh fruit flavors, and lower pH. So the wines were more, at the top, more fruity. so he could blend them. Every year, depending on the year, could blend more at altitude or less at altitude. And that I learned with him.
And it's a wine that is very long-lived. I'm sure you've tried older vintages
yes,
many times.
Yes, it's a wine that could live forever. He proved like that. Also, the still wine can age very well. As you know, the port wine was born as a dry wine. Only in 1820, there was a fantastic vintage with a lot of sugar content. The grapes were very mature. And in that time, the grapes start fermenting. And they ferment so much alcohol that the yeasts stopped working. They couldn't resist so much alcohol. And there was still sugar. So there was a natural port wine, as we know today, 19 degrees with still a lot of sugar. And this was a huge success in England. And they asked the buyers in England, they asked, we should repeat that. That's great wine that you should do. And for that, they decided to stop the fermentation with the brandy, to have the same type of wine that the nature show that you also could do that, like other wines like champagne, like Xerez. It was the nature one day that changed the thing and say you also can do this. But it was not pacific, this situation. It was, we had some people like Forrester, which is a historical person of the Douro, was against adding brandy. He wanted to make the still wine. Well, this was a huge discussion till the end of 19th century, but at the end of the year, everybody was making fortified wine like we see today. And only in 1952, restarted again the still wine with the Barcavella.
There was no one else making still wine in the Douro at the time.
Well, everybody was doing still wine, but not a control wine. It was a wine to drink. For the family.
For the workers.
Yes, we have to drink wine. We could not drink port all the time. So we make wine for ourselves. Everybody was doing some barrels for that and for the workers, but not to explore and to bottle like we know today. So that it was a revolution in the area to become again to the still wine today we call Douro wine. And I think this system, there was after that, there was some people, some houses that start making also still wine in that tradition, in this way. And I think that in 1990, Ramos Pinto has a great influence of the new era that we call Douro wine. Why? Because we selected the varieties for Douro wine. We planted the varieties to produce Douro wine. And we bottle 80,000 bottles with a strategy in the market. So everything was made from the beginning to the wine that we call Douro.
But long before that, in the 1970s, your dad sent you to France, to Bordeaux.
I was studying economics, and we are seven brothers and sisters, quite a lot of people, and in a Christmas dinner, he told me just like that, now, if you want to study enology, I send you to France. And I send you to France. That was good for me.
That was the key. You wanted to get to France.
That was the key. And I said, okay, I went, but study what? Enology. At that time, didn't exist this word in Portugal. And I said, what's enology? Enology, study the wine. And I say, okay, wine. I've been drinking wine all the time. I've been involved with wine. I watch, I don't know how many barrels during the holidays. That's not problem wine for me. Let's go to France. And it was like that. He turned
your whole life, your career.
My life I went to Bordeaux to study. And enology, of course. It was fun because it was in 1970, and the first year was with the same time with medicine, because you know, and it was very strange. I was studying wines with people that were studying medicine. Then I understood that Pasteur was the first enologist. So there was still a link between medicine and wine. And it was fun to understand that. And I had the chance to have as a professor Jean Ribeiro Gagnon, which was the man who resolved the problem of malolactic fermentations in the white wines. That was the problem in Bordeaux.
He figured out how to do it.
Yes. And also Pinot. Jean Ribeiro Gagnon, it was the scientist, and Pinot was the practical man who developed the tasting. And these two personalities, it was his classes. Their classes were fantastic, fantastic. One talking about colloids and things, strange things that I didn't know that exist in wine, and the other giving classes, tasting classes, drinking wine, enjoying the wine, and talking about wine in a way that everybody was totally surrendered to his classes. And also I had the opportunity to work. They invited me to work with them in his chateau. And I learned how to do some research in small scale, microvinifications, studying the different varieties and so on. So this was really a chance to me to see this world. And when I came back to Portugal, I realized that we were still in the medieval age. It was really, there's a music, so you had to get out to get in, you know, the Genesis. And it's true, in this case, I went out to understand what happened in Douro. And I had a chance to work with my uncle, José Ramos Pinto. He asked me to work with him. He was very worried about inertia. The region, there was any evolution. After the two wars, was completely isolated. The roads were really bad. The vineyard was totally separate from the wine. The blenders, they were in Porto. They knew about wine, and the viticulturists, the producers, they knew about vineyards. They didn't know about wine. So my job was to make this link. I understood it was necessary to put the vine and the wine. And my uncle was enthusiastic, and he said, well, we lose the knowledge of the varieties. We don't know which was which. There were some people there working on that. But I went to see, and it was in really bad conditions without any scientific control, and it wasn't very clean, and so. So my uncle said, you should study the varieties for port.
The grape varieties.
The grape varieties.
The different vines.
Yes.
Over.
And I said, okay, but I also want to study the varieties for Douro wine, because I had my father with the Barcavalla, I had Bordeaux, I had this message from our ancestors about dry port without sugar. So the dry wine was something very important for me. And I told him to study also, and he said, okay, go ahead. But the problem was when I asked how many varieties exist here. And they told me 83. And that was impossible to study this. It's impossible. The gurus from here, you should tell me 10 maximum to study. And they gave me the 10. And I planted 3 experimental fields in the 3 subregions with these 10 varieties.
The Cima Corgo, the Baxa Corgo, and the Douro Superior.
Exactly, because they are very different. Also, the experimental field for the rootstock, also for the plantation, many things to adapt for the modernity, for the mechanization, also to introduce the tractor.
To do trellising, to have it on wires so you could use tractors.
Yes, instead of making walls, that was impossible. It was a slave work. And also, I changed the direction.
So instead of terraces that would go horizontal, you did up and down on the slope.
Yes.
So you followed the curve of the slope.
40% of inclination.
North to south, yes. And you did it on wires.
Yes. Like that, we had a plantation with a density about 5,000 plants per hectare instead of 3,000.
Because you took out the walls, you had more space to plant vineyard rows.
Exactly.
Even though you were using tractors. Like even though you needed the space for the tractors, you still had more room.
Yes, and we can produce more per hectare, but less per plant, which was good for me. I wanted to produce less per plant. And you have mechanization, but of course, depends on the inclination. If it is more than 40%, well, that...
The tractor falls over.
Yes.
Yeah, the person dies.
Yes. Yeah. It's a tractor with a caterpillar, is not with wheels, you know. And this study about the varieties, in 1981, my uncle thought it was so important for the region, that he said, let's communicate this to a local university. And there was a symposium when we went there to this symposium, and I present the 5 varieties that were select for port and for there didn't exist the Douro wine, but for still wine. And it was polemic. So, you come from Bordeaux, you don't have to tell. We mixed everything. The problem, I'm not against the mixing the varieties. The problem is to know what we are mixing. Because we can mix good varieties and we have a good wine. And we can mix bad varieties and have a bad wine. Like my parents' generation, they talk about this vineyard good, the other one was not good. So,
but they didn't know why it wasn't good.
Yes, they didn't know. They lost the varieties were much better known in the end of 19th century, beginning of 20th century, than after the wars. It was lost. Yes. And so we said, okay, that's our suggestion. we have these five: Torriga Nacional, Tintucao, Corrige, Torriga Franca, and Tinta Barroca, that we can use for port and for still wine. If you want to hear this suggestion, very well. If you don't, go in your way. But we felt responsible to communicate this to the region. And then 2 years after, the World Bank came to Portugal to finance new replanting. And there was 2,500 hectares. They say, okay, we're going to give you the money, but you should present a project. And there was not a real project in an administration. They didn't know exactly what. And the five varieties were picked from our study.
Because there wasn't another study to really
not really.
Yours was the only one.
Yes, with concrete solutions. And the 2,500 hectares were planted with these varieties. Some people say, well, there was much more varieties to explore and so on. So, of course, there is always some polemic. But we said, okay, we agree, and we also are from you, we accept your opinion, but there is much more varieties to study. We couldn't study 83 varieties. It was impossible. We study something urgent that we should plant immediately and save the evolution of Douro, because everybody was planting, and they didn't know exactly how and when and what to do. So this is good for Douro wine and port wine. Please, we ask to the university, please, it's your obligation to study the other part, because the thing doesn't stop here. Well, unfortunately, the university didn't study anything about.
They didn't take up the other grape varieties or the other ways of planting.
But what happened is that not my generation, but my generation was like pioneers, opened the road, and the new generation for my sons, they are looking for those different varieties. So everybody now is experimenting here and there, new varieties, which is very rich for the future of the Douro and port wines. And in our case, we use more Sauzin. We use for the red and Tinta da Barca, some varieties that we add to our list. For the white, we have the Rabigato, Viozinho, Arinto, Folgazão. So there is... is fermenting the situation, and especially because this young generation is living there. My generation was going up and down. My parents' generation, till my parents' generation, they live in Oporto and used to go to the vintage in September and then go back to Port. My generation was up and down, and my sons are living there.
Because there's electricity and roads now, so
yes,
they can live there.
Yes, there is conditions for that. And also, the Douro wine gives them a chance to produce wine, because the port wine is very difficult to produce, it's very expensive. The laws are still a bit from the past. We are now studying how to change the laws for the port, to give the permission for the young persons, young boys and girls, could make port.
A chance for small producers.
Yes, because you see, to produce port wine, you have you need 150,000 liters in stock.
You have to have a big cellar. And at one time, you actually had to have a lodge in Vila Nova de Gaia.
Yes.
And that was preventing small producers from entering the market.
Yes, it was made for that. The laws are made for that, which in a way controlled the situation, and it was a success for port wine, but was not an evolution. The laws should be adapted to the new world. And that's what I want, and I like to work on that, to change this, because now the port wine is reduced to the some houses, five port houses mainly, big groups.
So basically there's five houses that make port, but a lot of people could make Douro wine. And that was a chance for the younger generation to do something that they could do, that they could actually be involved in.
Yes, they start with the Douro wine. But now they want to make the king, which is the port. And for that, we need to change some laws to give the chance for a young enologist to make this port. And that is very important to give some new life to the port wine. Port wine needs young people. Like all the sectors, if you don't have young people with motivation, creativity, and so, there is no evolution. And so we are working on that laws. And in our port association, we create a group to study how to change this and give the chance for the young persons to produce also port.
So when you arrived in the 90s, in the early 90s, what was Ramos Pinto like when you took up the idea of doing still wine and port wine?
Well, I arrived in Ramos Pinto in 76, which means 40 years ago, almost 40 years ago. And I went to Ramos Pinto. Ramos Pinto was not making red wine, the Douro wine. But as I wanted so much, I had a friend that has a vineyard, and I start making this wine called Valpardinhos in another part, because it was something that I wanted to make. It was a red wine, which became a success in that part of the world. And then, you see, the Ramos Pinto family became very big, and it was difficult to have decisions, everybody. As you know, as a family house, it's difficult. We were already 25, and it was difficult to have a strategy. So we decided to sell. My uncle, the president, decided to sell this to someone who could understand the family project, I mean, own production and viticultural evolution and so. And Rother was looking for a port house.
Louis Rother.
And Jean-Claude Roseau, which was the president of Rother, came to visit us. And when he saw our work, when he saw all the works that we have been doing, he said, well, that's the port company that I should buy. And we bought in 1990.
Because it was a family-run champagne house that also owned vineyards and made wine, and they probably understood a family-run business in Portugal that owned vineyards and made wine.
Yes, the philosophy was the same, and we were very happy. And they asked me to run the house. And to
why did they pick you?
I don't know. Now, the beginning 1990, they asked me to be in the board, but not as a CEO. But I was the responsible for all the wines till now. And in 2001, I became CEO. They asked me to be CEO, and it was something strange for me. I told them I learned about wines, to make wines, not to
run a business.
Run a business. Let me think about this. It's a strange proposition. And then I thought like a musician that I play in a group for many years. I was in orchestra playing an instrument like violin or something. Now they are asking me to be the maestro. So as a maestro, I can make the wines that I want because I can touch everything. All the stuff will work in this direction. And it's a great opportunity to make great wines. Okay, I said, okay. Of course, beginning was a bit complicated to adapt to this, but after that, and Rother has a fantastic strategy with Ramos Pinto, gave me carte blanche, and that makes me more responsible. And
because if something goes wrong, it's your fault, basically.
Yes.
It's not because they told you to do it that way.
And I have to answer for the everything. So it was a great experience that with them that I learned a lot of the way of winemaking and all the parts of the company. And it was a great, great years, 25, that I spent with them. And I'm very grateful about this. It was really fantastic. I don't see that there's many enologists that have these opportunities to have a life like I had.
Ramos Pinto had focused on tawny ports for a number of years.
Well, it's difficult. When we are seeing like something, it's very difficult to change these ideas. And I agree that Ramos Pinto was mainly for tawnies. And I'm very happy for that because tawnies is a wine that I think it's a great wine, totally different from vintage. And it was more for the Portuguese market, for Brazil, for France, and for Portugal, and not the English market. The English market was controlled by the vintage, by the English. And of course, they wanted powerful wines, very heavy, and it was a different taste. So the English sell the vintage, and the Portuguese houses, sometimes they used to make vintage, but it was not the main thing for the Portuguese houses. When I arrived, it was this more or less the situation at Ramos Pinto, and my first attention was to the tawnies. I realized how difficult it is to make a great tawny and how great is a great tawny. When I start working, I ask my father, what's the difference between a tawny and a vintage? And he said, vintage is a wine and tawny is a port wine. So vintage is the nature, is the year, is the right place when you choose the right grapes with red fruit flavors. You age this for 2 years in barrel and then you bottle, and it's bottle aging like the red wine. But this port is a fortified red wine. The tawny is totally different. It's a unique culture of wine aging, wine making. And you should understand that probably 80% or 70%, I don't know exactly, but the majority of port is tawny. And if you visit the cellars in Oporto, you see all the barrels where the tawnies age. The tawny is aged by oxidation through the wood, but doesn't age just like that. We cannot forget the wine, and we have to follow them. The wine is always changing, something alive. And the art of aging the wine is to understand what the wines need for the aging. The wines are like persons. They need they get sick and need to be treated. They need to go for a walk. They get bored sometimes. They need sometimes, they are a bit getting a bit older, they need sometimes a young company, young wine to give some life, to help him to age. Sometimes it's the opposite. The wine is too vigorous and need old wine to calm a little bit the enthusiasm. The young wines, like us, the young, they get married very well, very easily. The old ports, the old Tonys, to get married, have to study a lot. It takes time, and it's not, it takes a lot of time and difficult. So there is many things to do. And I understood that it was difficult to understand at the beginning. That is experience. And these wines, Tony, when we start working, we have wines that were made for our ancestors. And we work with them, we make another wines, and we live for the next ones. So the Tonys is wines of generations, something, a continuous process of generations. And Ramos Pinto was focused on that. But then start the magazines and everything's talking about vintage. And when I came to Ramos Pinto, the vintage was not so important, was more focused in Tonys. And the vintage were made in vats and so, but I asked my uncle to return to the past. I mean, make the vintage in the lagage. We rebuilt the new lagage.
The concrete tanks.
Concrete tanks when we trade the grapes by feet. And we still do that. And that changed totally the conception of port wine in Ramos Pinto. It was not only, of course, the tonnage we always have to improve. The wines are never finished. But we also have to improve the vintages. And in 1982, we have, I think we turned the page of the vintage in Douro, because we make 7 barrels with different varieties. So we start making vintage in another way.
So it's a different grape variety for each barrel?
Yes. And we blend them afterwards.
And people weren't used to doing that. Usually they blended them as grapes.
The vineyards were all mixed.
You harvest and you ferment
together. You
harvest
and then you choose the samples. And that because we apply all our knowledge in Quinta de Erva Moira. That was the first Quinta to 150 hectares planted with separated varieties.
Basically planted on the paper that you'd done.
Yes.
It was a family vineyard.
Yes, of course, it was always an incentive for my uncle that was very excited for, and he pushed me every time I present the results. He said, oh, I want more. So he gave me this force, courage to continue. It was a huge work, but with this motivation was becoming easier and very interesting. And we start making, as you said, with different varieties that come from Erva Moira. And 82 and 83 changed completely the way we make vintage. And since that, we have been doing evolution. And I'm very happy with the last vintage that we do. And even this year, 2015, I am sure that we'll have a great vintage. It's a great year.
It's been good for you.
Yes, very, very, very.
Has it been early and hot?
It's been a fantastic year because we have rain in the winter.
When you want it.
Yes. So we have a reserve of water on the soil. And the springtime, we didn't have rain. It was dry, dry, dry till, and June, we have a bit hot weather for 2 weeks. it was the only thing. But as we have the most part of the cycle with the low maximum temperatures, and during the night, the temperatures were low.
So it was cold at night, and that preserved the freshness.
Yeah, exactly. And the grapes arrived to the vintage to be picked in a very good, very nice grapes, fantastic grapes, not dry, not spoiled with diseases, small bays. So it was something ideal. And during the vintage, generally there's rain. There was only small rain during 2 days, and then became again a very nice weather. So the grapes are maturing very slowly and in a very good conditions. The wine, I say to work, they are magic. Because I've never seen like that. I don't know the final result, because now there's a lot of fermentations and there's a lot of brandy. So I'm very happy. I'm very happy to see special. It's my last year at Amos Pinto, and St. Peter gave me good conditions to go out with a great vintage.
When you taste the grape varieties that are different, what are the differences between those grape varieties? I mean, I feel like you would know that the answer better than anybody.
Well, aside from the whites, the main four whites, white grape that we use, we have the main variety for white is Rabigato. And this variety has a big resistance for the heat, keeps the acidity and keeps the fruity and freshness. So, and has some structure. So it's the ideal, in my opinion, the variety for this place. Then we have Arinto that keeps also the acidity, but gives minerality to the wine. Ravigato is more fruity, and this is my Arinto is more mineral and keeps also the acidity. Then we have Folgazão. Folgazão is a variety that has structure, body, full body, and it's a sunny, I like to say it's a sunny variety, because it's vibrant. It's like when we look to the sky, you see this brilliant air, you see. It's a very Douro wine for me. And the other one is Viuzinho, which is very delicate, suffers much more with high temperatures. But in a turn to the north side and higher altitudes, gives a very complex wine. So this is for the whites. For the reds, we choose the fives. Well, Torriga Nacional, which is the star. Why? Because it's very nice fruit, soft tannins, has some minerality, and intensity of fruit is quite very good. And it's also a variety that resists a lot to the sun. In terms of aging, I don't think she needs another variety to support for the aging. And this variety we choose, Torriga Franca, which is power and structure and volume. And this blend with Torriga Nacional, they have a complement from one to the other. There is a good blend. And then we have, I would say, a couple, like Roriz and Barroca. Roriz is the man. Vigorous, strong, thick tannins, sometimes a bit too thick, but very straight, very rigid. And Barroca, soft, velvety. Tannins are very soft, so they are opposite. And these two could help to give the blend. If you need more softness, if you get more vigorous, use one of them. And finally, we choose Tintucão because it's very different from the others. And that's what I always look for, a difference. Like when you have your piano, you want different keys. You don't want always the same key. You want different keys to make your song, your music. And lately, that's what the five that we proposed in 81. Now we are using also Sozão, which very vigorous and a bit rustic variety, and is full of color. It has a lot of color, dark color. So it's more for the color and a bit for the rusticity. And we use that because sometimes we have a wine that is a bit, you know, too smooth, or
too fruity, too round, too soft, too polished.
Too soft, and that gives something more energetic. And also, another one that we are using that we discovered is Tinta da Barca. And this Tinta da Barca is soft, like Barroca, but has fruit finesse, very delicate, but we notice that and gives some acidity, gives some lively to the wine. So we're going to, along these years, we're going to experiment, and we have still a long way to achieve the 83. Still, there's many generations to
achieve what you have. But to know about it.
Yes, but the thing in Douro, which is a very, very difficult country to work. I'm always asked why we are there, you are not a easier place. It's because the answer is because there is so many things to do. And also when you do something, you have an answer and you are done.
You can discover and yes. Find something new.
Yes. If you experiment something, you have a result. And when you start, it's like a mine. You find a small piece of gold and you want more, and you see that you can have more and more and more. And when you realize you are there for all your life, you can get out from there. That's how the Douro catch all these people there. And it's even the region, if you look, it's always changing. Always altitude, exposition, inclination, air, varieties, rootstock, everything is changing. So you have a huge orchestra to play your music. You have all the instruments there to play the music that you want to play, and I'm sure we'll die, and we just did a little in the region. So I'm suspect to say this, but that's what I feel. And I think a lot why we are there. We have to break. We don't have soil. We have a rock. And we have to break this rock 1.5 meters deep to make soil. And this soil is sterile. And this soil that you have to plant the new vineyards. And they only achieve the mother rock again on the fifth year.
It takes that long for the roots to get to the
roots. Yes, that's when we can make port wine. shaving this mother rock again with leaves of schist. These leaves of schist, they keep the humidity. Small pieces of water, and they supply the plant in a good conditions, not too much, not too less. And the vineyards are like us, they need to be supplied regularly with water or with food. If we eat too much and one day and the other day we don't eat, we have our quality of life is has problems. It's the same as the in the vineyards. And when they enter in these leaves of the schist, they have just what they need to survive.
So which do you pick sooner, the grapes for the dry still wine, unfortified, or for the port?
Well, the last grapes that pick now is Torriga Franca for red wine, because Torriga Franca has a very long cycle. So when Torriga Nacional was already ready, I had to choose for port and for red wine. And generally, I choose more maturity for port.
More older vines?
Older vines also.
Or
but more maturation, the degree of maturation higher.
Okay. But in that case of the Franca, you didn't.
In case of generally in all the varieties, you see, we cannot pick all the grapes at the same time.
Sure.
And sometimes the grapes, for instance, I like the Torriga Nacional 14 degrees sugar for the for red wine maximum. Otherwise, they lose a little acidity. If the pass 14, I will pass to port wine.
To the port wine. Okay.
To the port wine.
So it's the more because riper the grapes that go to the port, usually.
Usually, but it's not. I need also fresh grapes for the port. So it's always, you have to be there to make all this blend. You know that for red wine, you don't have the possibility to make so many blends.
And you're doing it from the grapes in your head.
Yes. And for instance, there is another variety. It's Torriga Franca. It's low degree, but it's more... For, we can use a lot for red wine. But Tinta Barroca is a very high degree to be a good maturation.
It takes a while for the phenolics to get ripe.
Yes.
And so you have to have it ripe, otherwise it's
yes,
harsh.
Yes, it has to go to 15 degrees sugar to have a good Barroca.
So, you know, in Burgundy, a lot of times they say when it flowers, then they pick 100 days later. From flowering to picking is 100 days. It's kind of the general rule. In the Douro, the vines flower, and then how many days later do you pick?
The temperatures in Douro are much more radical than they are in Burgundy. We can have a very hot year. Sometimes the things go very well as an average, and come a week of very hot and change everything. So it's difficult, in my opinion, there. And also, depends on the place where you are.
Sure. There's different regions of the Douro.
The region, altitude and low altitude exposition. Many things play on that. So it's not so easy to think like a flat, more or less flat country. You
right.
can't control more this situation. There you have to be there. That's why I'm always during the vintage in the vineyard to see what's happened. What are the changes? So it's a very complex region.
Sometimes for me, the sensation of freshness that I have drinking a vintage port is more fresh than the sensation of freshness that I have drinking a Douro red. Like it seems fresher, the port, which I would think would be unusual, but it's something that's happened a couple of times.
Well, the vintage is a long... experience to make a vintage. The red wines, we are still trying to polish the diamond. We found a diamond, a rustic diamond, and we are trying to polish. And last 3 years, there is more and more wines that look exactly this equilibrium, freshness, and power, and acidity. So we have been working that. You see, the wine that we have, we call Duas Quintas. One of the quintas is 150 meters, great maturity, and the other is Monzares is a 600 meters high. So, depending on the year to get this freshness, we're going to pick more at altitude and less and the lower part.
So you can, because you're blending vineyards from two different elevations, you can tweak how much you take from each to kind of get what you're looking for in this finished wine.
Exactly. And that's very important to give this, what you said, give this acidity and freshness.
And you're very literally the second generation of dry red wine producer in the Douro on a commercial level. How do you feel that progress has happened? I mean, when you look at what your father did and what you did, and you're about to hand off the company and move into a different phase of your own life, how do you feel about the accomplishment of where you've taken this idea of dry red from the Douro?
I'm very happy with that because I have at least the conscience that I work. I did my best. Probably I could have better. We always could have better, but I have this message to my sons, as my even at Ramos Pinto, and I'm comfortable.
João Nicolau da Almeida has a consciousness of continuity in the Douro. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you. When we do something, we always like to tell what we do.
João Nicolau da Almeida of Ramos Pinto.
Recently, a regular listener of the show reached out to me and asked why didn't I have a wine club that they could get regular shipments of wines that we picked for the show to be shipped to them. That's something that we'd be happy to arrange with Crush, who's our retail partner. And if you're interested in that as well, simply send me an email at levyopenswine@gmail.com. That's levyopenswine@gmail.com. And let me know that you might also be interested in automatic shipments of wines that we've picked out to go specially with these interviews and also picked out because we really like them. We'll be happy to figure it out with you with Crush. Send me an email at levyopenswine@gmail.com and we can talk further about it. It'll be a simple process to set up and you'll be on your way to drinking a whole lot better or at least more in tune with the show, which is, hey, not that bad of a thing. Thanks for your support. See you in the email. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear more about the show, you can go to our website, alldrinktothatpod.com, which has lots of information about myself and Aaron and how to buy a t-shirt if that's what you're looking for, or you can find back episodes to stream. You can also find us on Twitter at drinktothatpod. We have a Facebook page, which gets updated pretty frequently, and I'm on Instagram at levyopenswine, which is L-E-V-I, opens wine. You can also find Aaron's warm-up post on vinography.com. They're posted up once a week, and there's a lot of really interesting things that Aaron has to say, and it's a unique voice in the world of wine. If you haven't left a comment or rating for the show on iTunes, we'd super appreciate it if you would. It goes a really long way to helping our standings in iTunes and helping the show reach other people that may never have heard about it. If you'd like to send us feedback directly, I'm at levyopenswine@gmail.com. And if you'd like to send a donation to help support the show, the details of how to do so are on our website. Again, alldrinktothatpod.com. We'll talk at you again next episode. Thanks again for listening.